I have a list of questions here, and one of the first things I wanted to ask you about is, how do we become a free man on the land? How do we become sovereign? Do we have to fill out a UCC-1 or any other paperwork to become sovereign?
I think it's very important for people to understand words. And if you don't understand what words are, how are you going to know what it is? The word sovereign, another word for sovereign, is authority. And you ask me, how does one become the authority in their life? Well, allow me to tell you how that is. You are already blessed with that. God gave you that inherent right. And only in governments where there's a dictatorship or an unruly monarchy or those types of government, where you have a republic and a democracy, every one of you are completely in charge. There is no paperwork required to file or any other such fashion. So from my point of view, and it works every time, you are already sovereign. Don't let somebody tell you you got to file a bunch of paperwork and this and that, and et cetera, et cetera.
I see. So no paperwork is required. If you know what you're doing, you can do everything orally, correct?
Yes. That doesn't mean you can do everything. There are set-offs and things you need to respond to in writing sometimes, but that does not mean that a good contract law expert is not capable of merely orally dealing with whatever situation comes his way.
How did you get into all this? Where did it start for you? How did you learn this process? How did you learn about contract law?
Well, as I was a guest of the federal government of the United States, i.e. prison, for about 9.3 years, after being incarcerated for about a year, a guy came up to me and he said, would you like to read something interesting? Because he saw me reading these fiction books all the time, because I just read and study or whatever and nothing in particular. I said, sure. And he brought me a book called Cracking the Code, 3rd Edition. And that piqued my interest greatly. And from there on, I put all the fiction books aside, all the game plan aside, and commenced studying for the next, what I did, 24/7 from the rest of the time in prison, which is roughly another, probably almost 8 years of more prison time. So I got to have a great time.
Wow. And I've heard you talk about the chessboard story. Now, then, many people have heard you tell that story, but there might be new people that haven't heard the story. Would you just kind of run us through that?
Allow me a little backdrop for some of you.
Yeah.
I understand, and from the things I've read, it is said that almost the whole procedure of human life implies, or rather is, the continual fulfillment of contracts. And allow me to, all law emanates from contract or agreement. Therefore, contract is law and law is contract. Or stated in another way, contract equals law and law equals contract. Consent makes the law. I mean contract. So with that as a backdrop, let's go forward. Over the first few years of studying law, I came to understand the power of the pen, the ink pen, ladies and gentlemen, or pencil, if you will, it matters not, a writing utensil. I was one day playing chess out on the prison yard compound when a guard came by and he said, hey, do you have a rec? Creation pass for that chess set. Now, in my world, I believe that you have four doors to go through with every offer, and everything's an offer. He offered to take my private chess set, and I conditionally accepted his offer. He could have it if he wanted to pay $20,000 for the pieces, $10,000 for the little leather board, and $10,000 for the trespass. And that would be a price for taking it. He said, I'm going to take it anyway. And I said, well, if you do, it's perfectly okay, understanding that you're going to be incurring personally a liability in the amount of $40,000 overdue and owing to both you and your boss, the warden of the prison. He took the chess set. Now, under law, you have an obligation to try to resolve the matter with your brother first before you go whining and crying to the court system and burdening the public down at some Supreme Court, Superior Court, County Court, the public, if you will. I went to his boss, which was a lieutenant, and I said, LT, your guard, so-and-so, he took my private property, and the penalty for such is $40,000, and I want to know if he'd like to incur such liability also. And he said, you better go see the captain. I went to the captain, told him, look, so-and-so guard had taken the chess set. This was the gig. I went and saw the lieutenant. This is, he said, to come see you. He said, oh, you better go see the associate warden. That's one underneath the warden. So I went to see the associate warden, and I explained, brother, I went, your guard took my chess set. I went to his boss, the lieutenant. I went to his boss, the captain, and I've been now told to come see you to resolve this matter informally. He says, you better go see the warden. I said, not a problem, thank you. I went to see the warden, and after going through the same thing and that the price was $40,000, the warden said, go see the captain. Now, I've already been to see the captain. I know he's looking merely for an argument. So my counteroffer was, you won't mind if I seek formal resolution, will you? He said, oh, not at all. I said, why, thank you very much. I left, and subsequently I did what we term as a private administrative process. I file up some notices and some reminders that the guy forgot to respond to me, and maybe a notice of default and a consent to judgment, like what we call a three-part administrative process, that he owes me $40,000, and that's overdue and owing. He didn't do anything with that. Like most government officials, they help you out. They allow you to get whatever you want via tacit acquiescence. In other words, they go silent. They don't respond to you. Most people say, oh, they're ignoring me. Well, those that understand contract law know that I'd love you to ignore me. Refuse my tender. All of that means simply agreement. So, with that in mind, I filed an agreed-upon UCC against him for that amount, and all of a sudden, his life was affected. And he took me to federal district court to try and get the lien that was placed against him off. The court said that they had no authority over the commercial code of the state and rejected his offer.
Wow.
Case dismissed. He then sent me a letter on Department of Justice letterhead stationery that said if I didn't remove the lien, he would seek civil or criminal penalties. Now, those of you that understand law, that's called extortion and a threat.
Wow.
And when he did that, I put in a show cause order with the federal district court why he shouldn't be removed from office, arrested and removed from office, and he was. It was quite a stir at the compound, I might add. So it was very interesting to see the power of the pen, if you will.
Wow, that's incredible. So you basically established a contract, you put a lien on the guy, he tried to take it to court to get the lien removed. The court said we can't remove the lien because we got no authority over the commercial code. And then you asked the court to show cause why he shouldn't be removed from office, and he was.
Well, not because of that, only when he sent a letter of threat.
Oh, I see.
Or an attempt to extort. Because you see, In my world, we believe very strongly you're under God or you're under man. If you're under God, you'll follow God's guidance for your commercial affairs. If you're under man, then welcome to the world of attorneys, arguing, fighting, controversy. And just like Matthew, in the King James Version of the Bible, Matthew 5:25 essentially says, agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest he take you before the judge who turns you over to the officer and you got to pay everything. In other words, you're counseled, go to your brother and resolve the matter. And so that's what we do. We don't need the public. if you're a commercial law expert, you can go to your brother and resolve it. You can get a judgment. You can enforce it. There's such things you can do, ladies and gentlemen. It's like manna from heaven when you learn law. I mean contract. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that often. I'm going to say law. I mean contract. Sovereignty. I mean authority. We're going to learn a couple of words here maybe, and a new meaning that will help us lay people to perhaps understand these, what are perceived. What do you mean? I want to get my sovereignty. What do you mean you want to get your authority? You were born with it. Who do you think makes, who enters into the contracts? We have, I believe it was Chief Justice Marshall of the Supreme Court of the United States, and Supreme Court nominee Robert Bork in his confirmation hearings like about a decade or so ago here in the United States, that everybody that goes to jail volunteers. And I'm going to tell you that's true. There is nobody that is not in jail today that has not volunteered to go, meaning they didn't know how to resolve the matter, even though they may have done the crime, resolve the matter by a contract to resolve it without having to go pay the bill with your body being incarcerated paying the bill. Because in America, and as most of the world, all crimes are commercial. And you can go to 27 CFR, Code of Federal Regulations, 72.11, and it's thus so stated.
A lot of people say that the judges are corrupt, the courts are corrupt. What is your opinion on that?
I'm going to ask you a question. Are you sure? Let's pretend that you said it. Are you sure?
No, I'm not.
Very good. Are you sure of anything?
Not entirely.
I hope none of you are sure of anything, because J. Staples White has said it has cost many a man life or fortune for not knowing what he thought he was sure of. Now, there are many people that believe that judges out there do whatever they want. They act like God in their little courtroom. They're corrupt, etc. Let's put it in perspective, because I'm going to say that they are absolutely doing their job and they are honest. Does that mean we won't get a judge now and then that does some, takes bribes and this and that? Yes, but that's okay, and I'll tell you why. I know that sounds strange, but we'll see if we can put it in a little perspective. These judges are generally all contract law experts. And when you go into court, now, in common parlance, or in colloquial speech, in common parlance, people talk of that going to court is the same as going to trial. And so it's really kind of, court is defined as the residence of a sovereign. Since all of you are sovereign and residence is wherever you are, you're always in court. So with that in mind, if we end up in a public court, that means there's a controversy between some parties that hasn't been resolved privately or yet to be resolved. These judges, if you're in court, you're in there in equity or at law, I mean a contract. Some of you have seen that statue in some court buildings of a lady with a blindfold on and holding an apothecary scale aloft. Most people don't know that her name is Themis, T-H-E-M-I-S, defined by Webster's Dictionary as goddess of law and justice, daughter of Uranus and Gaia, represented as holding aloft a scale for weighing opposing claims. If you go to a public court with a complaint, an argument, a whining, and you're not there with a claim, the judge, by law and by the rules of the game, will be allowed to decide who's going to get what, because you're nothing but a debtor. Two kinds of people in the world today, ladies and gentlemen, and that's it. There's not black, there's not white, there's not yellow, there's not brown, there's not male, there's not female. It's debtors and creditors, and that's all you have in the context we're talking. So, when you're in court and you're a debtor, rest assured the judge will do as he pleases, and he is rightfully doing such. You just don't understand the rules. If you're there as in a law court and you understand protocol, ladies and gentlemen, court's going to be a lot different than you've been accustomed to. You will walk out a winner every time. I have done hundreds of cases, and we have yet to see the judges improperly conduct themselves. From a layman's point of view, it looks improper. But from a contract law expert's point of view, I assure you, they operate with impeccable integrity, because we believe that government is there to drive you to Father in Heaven, Almighty God. And they are servants of God, either knowingly or unknowingly, makes no difference. We won't discuss that point because that's lengthy. If that be the case, I would ask you this. How crazy do they got to make it seem to go into a court and crazy rulings all the time, and they sleep on the bench, and they do this and they do that? Well, they're perfectly within their right when they're dealing with debtors. They know that at the end of the case, why not sleep? At the end of the case, I mean, they don't do it all the time anymore, which is hear about it now and then. If a judge was asleep, what does it matter? A couple of debtors, when it's all said and done, he can decide how the chips are going to lay. And that's where they're going to lay. Now, if you're in a law court, he's merely the judge, and he's in his judicial capacity. And in that capacity, we're talking about a contract court. And if you know how to hold your contract, ladies and gentlemen, watch what happens. Oh, you're going to love the game. Never before has life been so bright or so beautiful. And when you understand the rules of the game, in my opinion, you're going to learn to love these wonderful governments that run the world. There's no room for monarchies and dictatorships anymore. You know, there's the Republic of China, United States, the several union states are organized as a republic. That doesn't mean there isn't a democracy. Now, most people don't understand words. It's called aphasia, A-P-H-A-S-I-A. That's the total or partial loss of the power to use and understand words. Most people think democracy means freedom. Where did you get such a fallacious idea? You can go right to Webster's Dictionary, look under mobocracy, and it defines it as democracy. Who wants to have the majority rule to decide what taxes, what you're going to do, what you can or can't do? Only a bunch of crazy people. But in a republic, and the simplest definition for a republic is a limited democracy. And that would constitute what I term a perfect government. What do you mean perfect? Perfect is also defined as complete or whole. Look it up in Webster's Dictionary. And therefore, if you have a government that provides a democracy for people that want benefits and school loans and medical insurance and Medicaid and Medicare and all sorts of benefits, what's wrong with that? They're entitled to have that government. The people want it in place, and they got it. Then there's those people in the republic, which there's a few of us. They don't want any benefits. And they know that the government is limited in the United States by the 17 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution. And it is limited very much. A lot of people say, how can that be? I said, well, in our America, or where we have the several union states, the state of Nevada has the city of Las Vegas in it, and it also has in that state legalized prostitution and cat houses, they call them, you know, where prostitutes operate and sell their services. But such a thing is not legal in most of the other states. In California, they have medical, in the state of California, the state has passed medical marijuana, yet some other states, like D.C., it's not a state, but other states in the several union states, or the union here, there is states that do not allow medical marijuana. And yet the feds don't approve of either one. How can they do this? Because the federal government in America is a creature of the states. And it was formed merely for the convenience and safety of the states. Now, if in America there's a bunch of people that want to think that they're a name and that they're a citizen of the United States, sorry to hear that. If they understood the Supreme Court, who said, United States is a federal corporation. It's in a quote called, it's 28 U.S.C. 3002, Section 15, Subsection 15. It'll tell you that the United States is a federal corporation. It is neither a country nor a nation. It came about being called that from all of the abroad travel outside of the several Union states. You didn't say I'm a Californian or a Texan. That's my country. You got used to saying I'm a U.S. citizen. That's where that came about. But the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled it is both historically and politically incorrect to refer to the American political alliance as anything other than a society. It is not a country nor a nation. And there's an article called Cooperative Federalism that anybody can get off the internet that just is a 73-page layman treatise on said subject. And once you start learning who they are, who you are, how it all operates, and the rules of the game, you're going to find that this government, like the government in England and Canada and all these civilized governments out there, are the most wonderful thing that we could ever hope for that God has blessed us with. It's no fun to deal with a 900-pound gorilla called the federal government in the United States if that gorilla's after you and you don't know how to deal with him. Or the government in England, the crown, if the crown is after you in Canada or in England, it's no fun because you got this 900-pound gorilla that you don't know how to train or how to keep in check because you don't know the rules of the game. Can any of us play any sophisticated game without knowing the rules? Well, I contend the rules are nothing more than contract law, ladies and gentlemen. And once you start studying a book on contract law, something on Williston on contracts, Corbin on contracts, Restatement Second, Brian Blum, contracts, examples and explanations, all of these have the same stuff in them. And you start learning, oh my goodness, what beautiful, I didn't understand how this worked, now I do. You know, when we want to hide stuff from people here in America, most of the people, we just put it in a book. You can rest assured they're too busy to go study or study something besides what's put out on the company line. The colleges and universities generally are towing the company line. Of course they are. It's been said, every man has two educations. One he receives from others, and one more important, which he gives himself. So where are we all educated from? I'd like to think my education really began in prison, so I'm a grateful guy to Almighty God for my wonderful time in prison because I got a chance to correct my thinking and understand the rules of the game.
So just to be clear, in our understanding, you don't consider yourself a United States citizen, correct?
Oh, I'm absolutely not. I'm not a corporate citizen. California is my country. Now, of course, my allegiance is to Almighty God. It's not to the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. My allegiance is to Almighty God. So I certainly wouldn't be pledging any allegiance to a United States corporate flag. But hey, everybody gets to choose and take what they get. You know, this whole game of contracts gets a little bit bewildering for people because they don't understand the rules. But it's said thus. Now remember, when you hear me say the word law, you've got to substitute contract. Every man must be taken to be cognizant of the law. Otherwise, there is no saying to what extent the excuse of ignorance may not be carried. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think you want to hear me give you an excuse why I can't fulfill my contract to you. If I borrowed $20 from you, do you really want to hear that my dog is sick, mom was, you know, broke her arm, the car broke down? The reality is you expect me to comply with my agreements and contracts. And when you can finally start to understand what really constitutes agreement between the parties, you're going to find your personal life, your professional life, your quality of life will be enhanced so greatly, you're going to say, where in the heck have I been all my life? Asleep? Oh, most assuredly so.
So why is a contract so powerful in a court?
It has been said that courts are only empowered to enforce contracts, not make them up for the parties. Let me ask you a question. What do you think you should be allowed to do with your property? Pretty much anything you want?
Yes.
So if you have a nice car and I'm your neighbor and you're like never washing it and you're throwing your McDonald's food in it and you're leaving trash piled up in it, What business is that of mine when that's your car?
None of your business.
Thank you. Now, so you believe, in the strictest sense, that your property is yours and I shouldn't be allowed to really tell you what to do with it. Even if you're abusing your new car and you're never washing it and you make the neighborhood look a little tawdry because you're keeping a beautiful new car all looking like crap.
Yeah.
But it's your car, you should be allowed to. Now, should I respect your rights?
Yes.
Okay, so what's wrong with all these people out here that don't respect the government's right to do what they want with their citizens? So you better be careful what citizenship you all claim. You want to claim U.S. citizenship, then you've got duties. And there's a wonderful bunch of beautiful maxims and principles at work here. Rights and duties are correlative. That means the extent of your rights are going to be limited by how well you do your duties, ladies and gentlemen. And there's some really cool thoughts that I'd like to get across to some of you that would really enhance your life. Because most people don't understand that while freedom of contract is a fundamental value, the exercise of this freedom by one person cannot be untrammeled. Like other liberties, it is delimited by corresponding rights held by other persons and by the state's legitimate interest in appropriate regulation. Very few people understand correctly this game called contracts, because it is the very glue that cements all of civilized society together. Earlier I said that almost the whole procedure, that means every step of your life, is fulfillment of contracts. Those of you that are married or in relationships or in families, you think you don't have duties to those people? You don't think you have duties to the society that we all live in? To the other people that help build the roads and supply water treatment plants? There are, within reason, certain obligations, even in the Republic, required of all of us. As children of God, we either have a moral obligation or a legal, under man, obligation. In the Republic, which is another word for private, or democracy, which is another name for public. So, when you get your hands on some contract law and some understanding, you know the nicest thing about it? These governments don't even charge people with anything. They're charging the straw man, the ens legis, the sesquicee trust. They're charging a name. Webster's defines a name as a word by which a person or thing is known. And a word is a speech sound or series of speech sounds that communicates a meaning. They never charged you, ladies and gentlemen. They charged a name. And they give you total remedy if you know it. There isn't a single case, criminal case, that can't be defeated. Well, for those of you that doubt that what we talk about works, contract law, September 12th, we had Dr. Robinson on, who we just finished a 4-count federal indictment, and no jail, no fines, no probation, and still has his medical license. And that was 4 serious counts with the Internal Revenue Service, a federal indictment. And it wasn't like he didn't make the mistakes, I'm telling you. He most assuredly did. He signed a tax return saying he didn't have any offshore, he wasn't a signatory on an offshore account. He certainly was, but his accountant told him, oh, it's okay, you don't have to report that. There's nothing wrong with it. Of course, the accountant told him after he got indicted, gee, I'm really sorry. That's a fact. It's all contract law. We do it all. It's kind of just like a huge kick in the pants to be able to bring harmony with you and your brother without having to go to some silly public court and be in a major controversy with attorneys they're just doing their job. Those attorneys, kind of like Shakespeare says, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. They have their entrances and exits. Each man has his part to play. So, and when they say man, they mean men and women. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a gender comment. This is to all. We're just on the stage of life, ladies and gentlemen. It's a game, and believe it or not, never had in the history of mankind has it been so rich and so beautiful for all of us. Either the glass is full, or for some, it's half empty. It's not half empty or half full to me. It's always full, full of air and water, but it's full. You know, in 1907, at the opening of the Jamestown Exposition in Virginia, that would have been April 26th, there was a president of the United States by the name of Theodore Roosevelt. And he has a very famous opening quote that I love, that I've committed to memory, and I'll bore you with it for a moment. Remember, substitute the word sovereignty, put authority in there. Now, that quote is over 100 years old, and I contend it is more apropos, more appropriate today than it was in 1907, over 100 years ago. It goes thus: we of this mighty Western Republic have to grapple with the dangers that spring from popular self-government, tried on a scale incomparably vaster than ever before in the history of mankind, and from an abounding material prosperity, greater also than anything which the world has hitherto seen. As regards the first set of dangers, it behooves us to remember that men can never escape being governed. Either they must govern themselves or submit to being governed by others. If from lawlessness or fickleness, from folly or self-indulgence, they refuse to govern themselves, then most assuredly, in the end, they will have to be governed from the outside. They can prevent the need of government from without only by showing they possess the power of government from within. A sovereign cannot make excuses for his failures. A sovereign must accept the responsibility for the exercise of power that inheres in him. And whereas is true in our republic, the people are sovereign, then the people must show a sober understanding and a sane and steadfast purpose if they are to preserve that orderly liberty upon which, as a foundation, every republic must rest. And that is such a, you know, I memorized that when I was in prison. It's just such a beautiful thing. Ladies and gentlemen, you will govern yourself or it will be done for you. And if you take a look at society in general, they need governing. But they've also, you know, they want to eat what they want, have ill health. Now, there's people born with genetic problems and things, and I'm not including them, but when you really consider the situation, being responsible for yourself is quite the responsibility. And rights and duties being correlative, that means the extent of one is measured by the scope of the other. Your duties and rights, they go hand in hand. If you're not doing your duties to either God or man, you don't have any rights. What do you mean? Well, where do you get the right to even be here? Do you even know who you are, where you came from, etc.? We won't go into all that, but this is like manna from heaven, ladies and gentlemen. Once you get the rules down, look out, because you're going to bring harmony and satisfaction in your lives and be able to do things you never dreamt possible. Where is your heart when you're dealing with your brother? At the government level, the judges, the person that slighted you? You know, this is what is the purpose of law? I mean, contract. It's to bring harmony.
How do we travel around in your car without license plates?
Well, you got to remember, if you go out and you get a driver's license, and when that's talking about a state-owned car, whose plate or identifying number is on that vehicle is my question. If you have a state plate on, if you have something where you registered that conveyance with the local Department of Motor Vehicles or some other entity, well, then they have in a trust relationship the legal ownership. You have the equitable ownership. That's where that nine-tenths is, of the law, you know, possession is the law, you know. The other one-tenth is held by the state. In any trust relationship, it's the trustee under whatever indenture will determine the rules that thing's going to be. So if you put a state plate on your conveyance, your automobile, your vehicle, however you want to call that, then you're going to comply with the rules. Now, if you have a private vehicle and you've registered it privately and given the proper notifications, you shouldn't have a lot of problem with the local authorities. But what, are you going to take that as your cue to run around and endanger people with improper? Consider the speed limits. Generally, they're there for a real good reason. That doesn't mean when you're out on a nice open stretch of highway that at night, in the middle of the night, some big old long distance, that if you're doing a little more than the speed limit, that there's any real bother with that. But, you know, consider your battles you're going to pick and choose. Why are you wanting this? And what is it? Pick your battles. Learn how to be in harmony. Learn how to be your brother's keeper. Learn how to love your brother. Then we'll worry about your sovereignty. Or maybe you worry about the sovereignty then comes at it. Give that some thought, ladies and gentlemen. In this game of contracts being all offer and acceptance, once you learn how to handle all of these offers that come your way, you go buy a new car from the automobile dealership, ask them sometime if you're ready to write them a cash or give them a check or cash. I believe they'll hand you the MSO or the MCO, which is the manufacturer statement of origin or the manufacturer certificate of origin. Where are you going to register it? With the state? Well, you gave up ownership of the vehicle. That doesn't mean you don't get equitable possession, ownership. Another word for possession is ownership. Another word for ownership is merely possession.
Yeah.
So you've got the equitable ownership, but yes, the bottom line answer is, available to the sovereign, and that means everybody, if they were intelligent enough and wise enough to properly apply their capacity, you're not going to need driver's licenses, this, that, and the other thing, but don't you think you might want to have one of those for your straw man so that when you hit an airport in some place that you could rent a car? They're in the public with state cars. What do you think they have to give you a private car? Quit looking for other people's benefits. So there's a real good reason. Now, I don't have a driver's license, Ben, but Gordon does. I don't have a credit card, but Gordon does. I don't have a Social Security number, but Gordon does. But I know who I am. Hopefully, one day we'll get to teach all of you who you are.
What if someone's coming after you, for example, a debt collector or the IRS? Is it possible to use this contract method to resolve those issues?
Absolutely. There's all sorts of neat ways to resolve those debts. And it doesn't require like a bucket full of Federal Reserve notes or a bucket full of gold or cashier's checks. You know, you as the authority, the sovereign, believe it or not, you have the authority. You think promissory notes aren't legal tender? No, contrary, but they are. What do you think a Federal Reserve note is? Just a debt instrument. It's a note. It's a promise to pay. And it's beautiful money. My goodness, if we're all stuck with gold we had to carry around, we'd all be getting robbed all the time. Go buy a car, I got to take gold with me. And heck, now we can do electronic. You know, most people, they don't understand money. They want to say real money. Really? In economics, money is a broad term that refers to any instrument that can be used in the resolution of debt. Then it goes on to define there's three kinds of money: commodity money, fiat money, and credit money. Think about it. If I want to trade you my Rolex watch or my stereo system or 2 hours of digging ditches at your house or mowing your lawn, isn't that a commodity? And isn't that money? Hmm. Money is also defined as a medium of exchange. So once we kind of get everybody disabused of their false notions and you start understanding the rules of the game, you're going to understand just what's available to you. And that means if you got credit card debt, you got car debt, you got mortgages, if you're knowledgeable enough, you will be able to do what's termed set off those debts. And if you've got a criminal indictment, those can also be set off. They're just merely commercial processes, ladies and gentlemen. And we do it all the time. You know, the gratification and the joy when you see the people go out and exercise what you've taught them and they're successful, you know, it's such a pleasant experience to help people and get compensated for it also. That doesn't mean we don't do pro bono work, because we do. We help lots of people without any compensation, because that's the rent you pay on this earth. I am my brother's keeper. Doesn't mean I help everybody that asks me. But, you know, when you see people whose lives are altered by coming into harmony with Almighty God and come into harmony with this beautiful government here in the United States and these superstar contract law experts called judges, you're going to realize what a cool game, and you wouldn't trade the world for it. This is the best game on the planet, ladies and gentlemen. It's just no fun to play a game when you don't know the rules and you can't even play. My goodness, it's a debilitating, fearful, horrifying experience. I got to go to jail. Well, you know, if you believe Romans, and again, the King James Version, Romans 8:28, that says, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God." Now, when I went to prison, I'm sitting there going, "Oh my gosh, 9 years! Now this is about enough to make you sick." You know, because I didn't believe I did anything wrong, and the attorneys lied, and the judge let them lie, and they all got busted in, and I couldn't believe what was going on. I was like taken aback. Now I look in hindsight, I say, what a beautiful game. I perfectly understand everything they did, and they were totally right in doing what they did. And I was most assuredly blessed to go to prison for 9.3 years. Because to come out of prison and to be able to understand the rules of the game, to be able to have influenced as many people's lives as we have, and you can go on those Monday nights and hear all sorts of people that didn't have to go to jail, whose lives have been altered, who've seen remedy and learning, it's like, wow, you get to do something that's so gratifying, and you get to be involved with people who, you know, that doesn't mean everybody's able to do it, because they forget their lines, they won't study, or they just freeze up. There's so many reasons. But you see so many people being successful. Anybody that follows direction with us has not failed yet.
I have always thought that the accepted for value, or A4V, process was rather complicated. Is it possible just to write a promissory note and tender that?
Yes, if you can keep it. See, there's a famous Ben Franklin here in America, and about, you know, when they were doing the Constitution and these republics here in America, he came out of the Constitutional Convention and was asked by a passerby, so the rumor goes, "What have you given us? A republic if you can keep it." Now, I told you another name for republic is private. And so, what have we given you? A contract if you can keep it. You know, when you in America, or in the several Union states located over here in America, because there's a bunch of North America, South America, you know, the English language is really something, ladies and gentlemen, so we'll kind of keep it a little bit of common parlance mixed in here without being inordinately technical. When you look at these several Union states and you look at all the what you can do with it, it's unlimited. You know, you can set off these debts, you can make this stuff happen, you can bring remedy. That if you set off a debt properly using A for V, and you're able to hold it, you will set off those debts. That's a fact. But let's say I send some entity a set-off bond that I create, a promissory note that I create. And under the Uniform Commercial Code here in the several Union states, under UCC 3603, that whenever you tender, make a tender for set off, and you give somebody a tender, and it's either refused or kept, there's discharge. And that means A for B. If I wanted to create simply a promissory note or a set off bond and send it to somebody and enforce it without all the more attendant documents, maybe a 1040 ES or a 1040V and a coupon and an A for V and a statement and a UCC 1 and a 3 and all these different things. Can I keep it? Oh, yes, rest assured, I can most assuredly keep it. All I know is, did I send it to you? I got a question. Did they send it back or protest it? No. Then there's discharge, if you can keep it. Do I even, if I was charged criminally and I got arrested off the street, do I need any paperwork at all to resolve the matter and not let them hold me? No. It can be done entirely orally. And I don't say verbally, because verbally is defined as in words. And words are both written and orally spoken, viva voce, by the voice. So I use orally very strictly. Verbally is a loose term for words. So when you get into law, ladies and gentlemen, it's a language unto itself, like any other branch of science. In astrology or in the medical field, words have specific meanings. And then used in context, they're even more interesting, like the word run. Can you define running for me? Well, you might say it's running, you know, like going faster than a walk, but, you know, pumping your legs. And I say, well, how does that relate to a guy running for office, the paint running down the wall, your nose is running? Context is critical for the meanings of words. And law, like every other branch of science, has what's termed technical words. Technical meaning according to standards and rules. So for all of you that are used to using a word in a layman's sense, just normally normal conversation among us, it carries an entirely different meaning. And there are words of expression used in law that have been agreed to have very specific meaning. So for all of us that are going to play in contracts or law, it would be important to learn some of the, how shall I say, lingo. So you need to learn a little bit of language. So quit thinking that a word means something when in that particular branch of science it has a different meaning. So with a little bit of language course and a little bit of study, it takes you about a half a day and you're radically different. You know, James Allen, a very famous philosopher whom I love dearly, circa 1850, he has such beautiful things in a little treatise called As a Man Thinketh. You can get it off the internet free. And, you know, the aphorism, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, is so powerful. But some of the quotes of it are like, every man is where he is by the law, I mean contract, of his being. The thoughts which he has built into his character have brought him there. And in the arrangement of his life, there is no element of chance. But all is the result of a law, I mean contract, which cannot err. This is just as true of those who feel out of harmony with their surroundings as of those who are contented with them. And elsewhere in it says, you cannot travel within and stand still without. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to travel big time, get some contract book. Now, there's a lot of guys out there like myself or whatever, and gals, who espouse certain principles and beliefs. And you'll have to decide who makes the most sense to you. And you have to do some study to find out. Now, I don't agree with all of my contemporaries in everything that they say and do, but what does that matter? And I don't think they all agree with me either. What difference does it make? You should find out what works for you. My only problem is I spoke with a major guru once, and he said, well, you know, I really like the stuff you say, but you got it wrong. It's really all about trust law. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, isn't a trust a three-way contract? Well, yeah. I said, so it's just contracts, right? He goes, well, no, it's just trust law. So I'm having a lot of trouble, and this guy's really bright, you know, kind of like genius level with statutes and codes, and I'm not even in his league with that. And I said, you know something, and I'll just call him Jim. I said, Jim, I got one problem, buddy. Because he said, you just do it wrong, Gordon. And, you know, I got to agree with my adversary quickly, so I thought I'd try a little of my own, you know, medicine. I said, well, I got one problem, Jim. I said, you know, I keep winning, and so I'm really stuck on stupid because I really like winning, so I'm going to have to keep doing it wrong because I see you do your stuff, and can you tell me what you've won? What have you set off? Who have you helped? I'm all ears, buddy. He said, okay, I get your point. I said, so as long as I keep winning, I don't think I can find fault with what I'm doing. Now, that doesn't mean I know it all, because I do not. I am so far and so much needed to learn. But I and others are making such wonderful headway, and we are seeing remedy all of the time. And all you got to do is get into the principles that govern this whole society. Ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion, there's one world government existing today. You don't have to worry about one world government. It's already here. It's called contracts. And like our good friend Jim, you know, I guess we're just going to have to stay stuck on stupid men go win everything, and they can stay with trust. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, in that sense that it's, yes, I don't disagree that it's all about trust. The United States government is a giant trust, and everything we do is trust. That is not an inaccurate characterization. I just boil it down from my understanding as simply, it's all contracts. And thus, I go to a contract book, and I get such pearls of wisdom you can scarce imagine. You know, I got some of the stuff, you know, memorized in some of my contracts books. I got a lot of memorized. But at the bottom of page 50 of the Blum edition I have, it says in colloquial speech, people often talk of signing a contract. And that's in quotations. Strictly speaking, this is inaccurate terminology. The contract is the legal relationship between the parties, and the document that is signed is actually the record or memorial of that contract. Oh, what a pearl of wisdom. And let me tell you the importance of such a thing. Knowing that when you go down to the car dealership and you buy a car, we'll use those layman words, you buy a car and you sign that piece of paper you call the contract, you had to negotiate the terms and conditions before you ever did it. Reminds me of a case I had in California. It was so cool. It was a divorce case. This young lady up in the Bay Area was getting a divorce from her husband. And she had moved in with a guy 11 years ago, got married 3.5 years ago. That means a legal relationship. That's by paper, by form. So got married 3.5 years ago, and then now that this whole relationship is breaking up, and the husband, he owned the home before they got married. It's a nice home in San Francisco, and he owned it free and clear. He booted her out, said, hit the road, baby, got a big old fancy attorney, and he's a mean guy, and he just shoved it down her throat. Now, this lady was the breadwinner in the family. She's a corporate headhunter, and she made, you know, 6 figures a year. That means over $100,000 a year. And the husband, he was on cruise control, made 20, 30 grand a year. So for 11 years, they're cruising on this gal's six-figure salary and, you know, living and fixing up his nice little home for them. And then he decides to boot her out. Now, in the divorce, she got the shaft because in California, there is no prejudice. Man, woman, it doesn't matter. The breadwinner pays the more money. So here she is stuck in this divorce contract with having to be audited every year, give him a lump sum at the divorce, pay his credit cards, and don't get the house, nothing. And the divorce will be final in a week. So her girlfriend hires me to take care of it. And she says, you think you can do something? I said, sure, contracts are dynamic. They always can move. Not a problem. Let's see what we can do. Let's have a little fun. And so I contacted the husband's attorney and said, well, this is Gordon Hall. I'm counsel for, we'll just call her Janet. For Janet. And I said, you know, her attorney's no longer with her. I'm handling. She says, well, that's fine. We have a hearing next Thursday and the divorce will be final. I said, well, that's what I'm calling about. My client cannot afford to pay the lump sum nor deal with what she signed and agreed to. Well, why'd she sign it? I said, well, you know, my client's a little light in the butt and her attorney threw her to the dogs. Now, I understand this and I understand it's California law, but I said, you know, I got to tell you, it's really not fair. She doesn't want any of the guys home. She just doesn't want to be audited every year, doesn't want to pay his credit cards, and it's really unfair, patently. She goes, doesn't matter. That's California state law. I said, I know it is. And I said, please, could you go talk to your client for me? She said, I can do it, but it ain't going to do any good. I said, I'm just asking you to do it because I really would appreciate it. You know, got to do the nice guy thing first. And so I said, please. And so she went and did that. And she came back and said, nothing. I said, well, I didn't really want to do this. I said, so please forgive me. I said, I'll tell you what's going to happen. I said, I want you to go tell your client that I'm going to shove all his bills down his throat and I'm going to take half his house away. She said, what? I said, yeah, I'm going to shove all your bills down your client's throat and take half his house away. And she said, just how do you think you're going to do that? I said, now, I didn't want to do this, and I don't want to be offensive. So before you get too far, I would like you to call this attorney. He's an attorney for a major retailer in the United States. I said, he's going to tell you what it's like to deal with me. I'm the nicest guy around. But I said, there's things that you just don't quite understand, and I really didn't want to do this. So why don't you call this attorney for a major retailer, and this is a huge world-class retailer that took me about 10 days to do the case with them. They didn't want to cash a check. It cost them 10 grand, and they paid within 10 days, all right? So it's really a cool story. But so here I am. So I said, would you please call this attorney so you understand what you're dealing with? I said, I'm nobody, but I said, I'm kind of interesting in this field. And I said, it's like this. I said, I agree with you that California state law puts the shaft to my client. I said, it's too bad that my law or her law supersedes California law. She says, what do you mean? I said, well, it's said that in colloquial speech, people often talk of signing a contract. That means getting married 3.5 years ago. Strictly speaking, this is inaccurate terminology. That means it's wrong. The contract is a legal relationship between the parties, and the document signed is just a memorial or a record. I said, my client got married 11 years ago when she moved in. And my client has put money into the home and the property. Therefore, she has a vested interest. And I said, I conditionally accept your offer that California state law on proof of claim that California state law supersedes constitutional protections and safeguards of liberty of contract. My client entered into a private contract 11 years ago. She said, I'll call you back. About 3 hours later, she called back and said, you got a deal. Took her over the weekend to rewrite the contract. We signed it Monday, and my client got what she wanted. I'm going to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. This thing called law, when you understand it, what, where, when, how, this is the most beautiful planet in the universe. Almighty God's put this here for you and I, and the game is contracts. If you want to come out and play, then let's learn the rules. And if you don't know them, then get with somebody that knows them. And I could tell you so many cool stories of the wildest things, from chess sets to double murder cases to divorce to probate. It doesn't matter. When you've got a contract law expert on your side and they know the rules, I'm going to tell you, it's like magic. It's the most wonderful feeling on the planet. You know, my ex-wife is really cool. She's with this guy, and his business partner locks him out of his offices one day. They've been together for like 15 years, and they got $250,000 in their business account, and that other partner takes all the money out, locks my financial planner, ex-wife's husband out of the offices, and says, pound sand. And so for 3 weeks, he's lamenting, he's upset, he's depressed, he don't understand that he's, doing. I'm telling my ex, please let me do something about this for him. Because he took good care of my kids while I was in prison. So I liked the guy. So I said, please let me take care of this, because I saw the letter this guy sent. And it said, gee whiz, Keith, I don't know why you're upset. I just changed the locks for security and this and that. I mean, just wild statements, but wouldn't let him in or anything. But you see, courts speak through their record. And my guy's just orally whining and complaining and yelling, and he's not putting anything in writing. I mean, a record. Another word for record is writing. So I said, please let me make a response to this. I said, they got a contract law expert on the other side. Let me at them. My ex finally convinces him to do it, because he just doesn't want any problems. He's like, he just doesn't want to enforce his rights. And he's afraid of his business partner. The guy's got a couple of mean kids, couple of criminals. I said, let me handle this boy. He doesn't understand what he's dealing with. So he lets me write a letter. And all I did was do conditionally accept on proof of claim that your taking of $250,000 isn't theft, constituting a $1 million penalty and this, that, and the other thing. That the day he got that letter, he calls the partner up and he says, come get everything, get all your stuff, and just get out. And in his letter, it's so classic. It says, he tells him, he says, I don't know who wrote that letter of mass destruction. I said, you let me. I'd have owned all that quarter million, his whole business and everything. He'd have been toast. Because guys like that are not nice people. And we are. Now, I'm not one to be harsh on somebody, but, you know, if somebody wants to bring upon themselves the 10 plagues, that's their problem.
Would you please tell us the major retail story?
Well, I go into this major, I buy this check for $186.40 at this major retailer's place. I go down to pay the bill with it, and they say, no, it's got to be exactly $186. So I go, okay, my bad. So I go to the nearest retailer that's, you know, that same retailer. He's got a different outlet near there. They're world known, by the way. So I go to this retailer, and I go in, and I say, I'd like to exchange this cashier's check for one for $186. They said, no problem. $3? I said, no problem. Here you go. They said, Social Security number, please. I said, oh, I don't have one. I told you I don't have one. Gordon does. But, you know, I'm having a little fun. I like to kind of play now and then, you know, just do a few things. And so thought I'd, you know, let's see what we got here. And they said, oh, we can't cash the check. The Patriot 2 Act and store policy. I said, are you sure? Remember what I asked you earlier? It has cost many a man life or fortune for not knowing what he thought he was sure of. You don't want me to ask you, are you sure? Because it can be a little bit of fun. You know, I'm being a little facetious. I said, are you sure? They said, yep. I said, well, that's okay. I'll accept your right to deny my right to, you know, to do this, deny my God-given unalienable rights, and Title 5, 552A, Title 42, 408A8, and Title 42, Section 1983, for merely $10,000. And I explained what those were and gave quotes of them. And this poor gal is looking at me like, you know, with a jaw that's dropped and saying, you know, well, you know, I said, is your supervisor here? Remember, informal resolution. Yeah. So I let her say, you can deny me that, right? But it's only 10 grand. Now let me talk to your supervisor. Supervisor gets the same offer. She's a little flabbergasted. Then the store manager, and he's a little flabbergasted. Of course, they're not going to give in. And I said, well, just sell me another one because I got to pay the bill, and I'll worry about that later. And could you give me the district manager's number and name, please? And I called the district manager and explained the situation. She says, oh, Mr. Hall, we have thousands of attorneys. I can't believe they got the law wrong. I said, that's perfectly okay. I understand. And I'm looking forward to an animating contest between thousands of attorneys and myself. And she goes, please, Mr. Hall, we'll have someone call you in a couple days. Nobody called, so I sent him my hello, how are you? You know, pay me the 10 grand, or it's going to be another 50,000 on top of that. Now, if you know your business, you're going to get yourself a judgment. You're going to march into a retailer store and empty some tills and some shelves, ladies and gentlemen. It's not going to be a pretty sight. So I send it off, and 2 days later, I get a phone call from a certain George so-and-so with a certain retailer out of a certain state here in America where their corporate offices are. And he says, I got you a Gordon Hall. I says, yes, how can I help you? This is so-and-so with so-and-so. I said, well, how you doing, George? He said, I'm great, Gordon. How are you? I said, well, I'm really good. How are you? So I'm really good. And I mean, now, this is like really strange. It's really cool. But you see, I understand the attorney's going to want an argument, and that's what he's going to fish for. So he says, I got your paperwork. Okay. He says, but I don't even know what you want. There's no numbers. There's no nothing here. Now, I happen to know my paperwork, and there's lots of numbers there. The average debtor's going to start explaining and justifying, and that's going to make you a debtor. And I got to agree with your adversary quickly. I said, must be my bad. I thought I put him in there. Let me get my copy. He goes, oh, here it is. He says, well, I'm not authorized to settle this. I says, please, George, don't trouble yourself. We'll let the paperwork take care of itself. He's, no. Let me go to the powers of being. I'll get back with you tomorrow. He calls me the next day. Another pleasant, you know, introduction. Hi, hello. You know, kissy face, and we're back and forth. And so he says, well, how much do you want? I said, well, isn't it in the paperwork? He says, or it was the day before, he goes, I can't negotiate this. I can't offer. I can't do this. I don't have the power. I said, don't worry about it. Next day when we're doing it again, he said, how much do you want? I said, well, isn't it there in the paperwork? He said, well, how much do you want? I said, what are you offering? He says, how about X? I said, I don't think so, George. He said, well, I can't bid against myself. I said, please, don't trouble yourself. Let the paperwork take care of itself. How about this amount? I said, if I receive the money forthwith, and that means like immediately or as soon as practicable. And he said, someone will call you tomorrow. The next day, nobody called me. The next day, I got a certified mailer and had the money in it. So it was like a, you know, I'm telling you, I could just, it goes on and on. It's not maybe. I don't say that this is contract law because I think it is. I think it is, but I also got about 100 or 200 or more success stories from, I told you what they range from. It runs the gamut. I don't care if it's from arrest on down. It's like when you learn this contract law stuff, I mean the rules of the game of life, or you get a guy who can, or a gal who can give you some good guidance and bring you in harmony with the scriptures and under God, I'm going to tell you, you're going to love your government, you're going to love these judges, and if you ever stop to really think about what they really do, you would come to realize that they are absolutely correct in what they're doing. And I know that this sounds wild, and you know, we often say, well, they lie, cheat, and steal, because they're supposed to. If they ever made government a wonderful, beautiful, comfortable place, look at how many people sign up and offer a cut of their paycheck now for Social Security that's inadequate when they get there. Can you imagine if it was really good and it wasn't a problem and they weren't always taking it away and lying and cheating and stealing from you? My gosh. The lines for being taken care of by the beneficiaries would be way worse than it is. People say this government is like, you know, rigged or stupid, they don't know what they're doing, $800 toilet seats, look at that stupidity. Who do you think runs the world right now, ladies and gentlemen? Who do you think carries the big stick in the world? Do you think there's somebody bigger than the United States government who's got more weaponry, more firepower? I'm not saying might makes right. I'm just telling you, there isn't a bigger influence in the world today than the United States. That doesn't mean that we're any better than anybody. I'm going to tell you all that the outlook in the future for the not only the United States, England, Canada, all civilized countries, I've never seen it brighter. To me, the glass is full. We're running around with iPhones and computers in our hand, these iPhones, notebooks, these things that are so revolutionary and so beautiful. Remember what Roosevelt said, we of this mighty Western Republic have to grapple with the dangers that spring from popular self-government and from an abounding material prosperity greater also than anything which the world has hitherto seen. We got 767 Boeings. We can fly across the world eating a steak dinner in a half a day. You know, it just gets better. And yes, the governments in democracies, they always end in anarchy. So unless people start waking up, I think they're going to find they're not going to like it very much. And for those in a democracy, the world is nothing but glim and dim and ugly, because it's going to get uglier. Count on it. The 50 pounds of change or 30 pounds of change you're wearing today, they're going to be double that in another decade or two, as it should be. And if you're in the Republic, which leads to enlightenment, success, and happiness, and progressiveness, you're going to find that it just gets better every day. Never before have I ever seen it be so bright. We have computers. You and I, Ben, are talking here. We're talking to the world right now. What in the world is? Are you optimists or pessimists? You know, this is a world to live. Never before have I seen it be so bright. And of course, rest assured, this democracy, like any other democracy, will eat itself. They are rapacious molechs. They eat their own and everything else. But you know, This is God's world, my friends. It doesn't belong to the U.S. government, the Crown, or anybody else. It all belongs to the Almighty. We're nothing but sojourners on the land. And the sooner we recognize that, and you understand, you think God doesn't have everything under control, that things aren't what they're supposed to be? Relax. Never before. You're going to be able to enjoy with this wonderful animating contest for freedom, if you like it. Well, I don't want to deal with it. You were sent to Earth for a probationary period. This is an earthly testing period. You need all the crooks and the wild, crazy things and the democracies and the republics. What a spicy world. What a spicy world we live in today. Never before has it been so good or so bright. Now, to the pessimist, it's dim and glim and job outlook and this and that. Well, learn some law. It wouldn't take you that long. And think about it. There's nothing but people with problems and debts, and you could step right in there and be your brother's keeper and get paid good to do it if you get it down pat. So it's nothing. I mean, for me, it is just as bright as it could be. It's never been bright, and that's not just saying it. It's because it's a fact. We are today in possession of knowing that we have rights, not privileges, that we live in a republic, not a democracy, unless you want to. I'm standing in a republic. People in my home are standing in a democracy. It's just, do you understand who you are, who you aren't? Civilized countries throughout the world implement contract law no matter what. That's one world government, ladies and gentlemen. It's contract law running the world today. And so the same rules that are over here, I promise you, are over there. It's the merchant law. It's the law of the sea. It's a beautiful time. You don't have to be afraid of it. Embrace it. It's here. It's always been here.